What I'm going to talk about today is a joint work with Tom Masterson and Ki-jong Kim. And the main purpose of the paper that we wrote and the model that we developed on the basis of which the paper was written is to simulate the fiscal policy initiatives that are going on in the U.S. And the first instance to which we applied the model and the method was to take a look at the Obama stimulus plan, or what is known, what's its official name, is the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, or the ARRA. And the idea is to look at the effect of the stimulus package on the average household's income, on gaps between advantaged and disadvantaged households, and to look at overall economic inequality. I'll start with just going briefly over some background information on the U.S. economy. What is shown here in this graph are the averages of quarterly growth rates in GDP, which are the bars, and employment, which is the line. And you can see that 2000s, in several ways, represent a lost decade for the United States. Output growth during 2000 was half of what it used to be in 1990s. The slowdown in employment growth is even more striking. During the 2000s, the employment growth in the United States was only a quarter of what it was during 1990s. Even if you take out the last quarter of last year, 2008, and the first quarter of this year, when output and employment growth really collapsed in the United States, the picture is still not very pretty. And that's what is shown under the on the bar labeled 2000s within parenthesis 1. Now, one of the striking things is the exceptional distress in the labor market. Some of the favorite indicators that I use to track this is one of them is shown here. And what is shown here is the average time a person who is unemployed spends being unemployed. As you can see, the previous peak of this series was in 1983. I believe it was May, and it was about 12 weeks then. And right now it's at a record of 18 weeks. Another indicator is the share of the long-term unemployed in the total population of unemployed. Again, the previous peak was in 1983 June, when it was about 25% or something like that. Now it's almost up to 30%. That is, this is data as of June, last month, June 2009. Now the income side also confirms the story that I've been saying of 2000s as the lost decade in the United States. Again, what's shown here is women's income, the blue bar, and men's income, which is the maroon bar, and the family income. All of them show substantial slowdown, except for women's income during 2000s. But the collapse in family income is very striking, and one of the key factors that is driving the trajectory of growth for family income is the slowdown in men's income. And the prognosis for that is not at all good, given what's happening to the American manufacturing sector. So this is the general background in which, the kind of economic crisis or the employment crisis that was there in the United States and which Obama inherited. He came to power, even before he came to power, there was serious talk among his advisors as to put together a package of spending increases and tax cuts which will jumpstart the economy and will stimulate employment. Now, the ARRA, or the fiscal stimulus package, which eventually got passed with remarkable speed after he came to power, it was within like a matter of 4 weeks or so that the stimulus bill was passed. What does it look like? So here we have a breakdown of it, and really what we are doing is to extract from the total amount, total budgetary cost of the stimulus package, an amount that is appropriate to model employment effect. So what's shown on the first line is the total budgetary cost, and as you can see, it's about $787 billion. And what is shown on the last line is the amount that we are using to model the employment and the distributional effects. Now, the main thing is that we are taking out some of the, some of the amounts that are set aside to offset the budgetary shortfalls that are expected to occur at the subnational levels of government, at the state and local level. Then there are some other differences due to coverage and timing and so on. But basically, we end up with about two-thirds of the total budgetary cost, and that's for the period of 2009 to 2011. So we have a three-year horizon over which we are looking at the effect of the stimulus. Now, the composition of the stimulus package was subject of intense political debate in the United States. Again, the bottom line is that the more right-wing or the more conservative-leaning politicians, both in the Democratic Party as well as among the Republicans, wanted a package that was skewed heavily towards tax cuts, whereas the alternative side wanted more spending increases. And as you can see in the final mix, it's the tax cut side that won the battle eventually, so that 55% almost of the stimulus money went in the form of tax cuts, and the remainder was for outlays. So what's the method that we are using to figure out the total employment effects of this would be? There are really two methods. One is about the method that's used to figure out the employment effects of purchases of goods and services by government. And here we use an input-output method to estimate the total jobs impact of the expenditures. And we do it under two separate assumptions. One is that of a government assumption, and the other is that of the private assumption. Now, the two assumptions reflect conventions in national income accounting. The government assumption reflects the older national accounting convention, which views the government purely as a consumer, whereas the it reflects the newer national income accounting assumption, which views the government as a producer and as a consumer of goods and services, whereas the private assumption is the older assumption, which says that government is purely a consumer, in which case most of the distribution of the final demand will go to private industries. For transfers and tax cuts, we are calculating the effects by using GDP multipliers, and again, we do it under two separate assumptions about the value of the multipliers. One is assuming a medium range of values for the multipliers, and the other is assuming a high level of values for the multiplier. So the combination of assumptions really produces four different scenarios, and simulations were carried out for all four, but I will present most of the findings with respect to one scenario, which is the government medium scenario. Now, for the total effects, total effect on employment, as you can see here, our range of estimates fall within 8.6 million to 6.1 million new jobs created by the fiscal stimulus. It's very close to what the administration has estimated, which is shown under the bar labeled CEA, which is a Council of Economic Advisers, and it's 6.2. So our estimates are very much in line with that, what the administration is expecting to be, what they would get from the stimulus package in terms of the new jobs that will be created. Now, the next step in our modeling was to figure out, once we have an estimate of total employment and we have it by industries and by occupation, the next step in the modeling exercise was to figure out who will actually get these jobs. And for that, we have to use some kind of microdata, which will have data on individuals with detailed information about their labor market participation, demographic characteristics, income sources, and et cetera. So the survey that we use for this purpose is the official income survey for the United States, just a sample size of about 80,000 households. So once we start with that data set, we have to then address the problem of, among those individuals from that sample, who is going to get the jobs. Now, once we construct an employable pool, or the reserve army of labor, as they would say in the olden days, the task is to figure out from there to pick people who would who is most likely to get the job. So there's a set of statistical models which do it, and in the Q&A session, if we do have time, I can discuss more in detail about it. But since Gul has waived a time reminder, I'll just proceed to the results. Okay. So now what this shows is the results as to the demographic composition of the new jobs that will be created. So there are two criteria that you can use to judge the equity aspects of job creation, right? One is to see among are jobs being created for those who are hit the hardest by the recession. Now, if you want to do that, you will compare the numbers shown in column one, with numbers shown in column two with what's shown in column three, because column two shows how the job losses were distributed among the population groups. For example, the 73% or 73.5% of those who lost jobs after the recession were men, and 26 were women. But if you look at ARRA or the stimulus package, then women get a larger share of the ARRA jobs. So if you use this criteria, you will find that the stimulus package actually favors women, it favors non-whites, and it favors the more educated, that is, those who have some college or are college graduates. But there is another criteria also, which I think is more appropriate to use, which is to compare the new jobs created under the ARRA with what the baseline was. That is, compare it against what usually is considered as people who are disadvantaged in the labor market. So if you do that, you will find that it does not really favor women. For example, in December 2007, about 47% of the employment were made up of women, but under the ARRA, only 40% of the new jobs go to them. So in that way, it's not favoring women. Skip this. Okay, so what happens to household income? Here what's shown is the trends in household income from 1999 to now. So 1999 was the peak year in terms of the level of household income. So I have set that equal to 100, and the values for median household income for the other years are shown as multiples of 1999. So as we can see, median household income declined in the 2000s from 1999 till about 2004, and then it began to rise slowly. So we estimate that in the last year that median household income has fallen by about 1.5%. And we estimate that the ARRA will just manage to recoup the losses that the average family had endured during this period. Now, we should note that it still continues to be far below substantially below what it was in 1999 and 2000, even with the ARRA. Now, I'll conclude with this slide, which shows the change in the share of aggregate income by quintile. So what is shown by the blue bars is the change that happened in each quintile's share in total income between 1999 and 2007. So you can see for bottom quintile, the second quintile, and the third quintile, they actually suffered losses in their share in aggregate income during the period 1999 to 2007. All those bars are pointing down. For the fourth quintile, there was not much of a difference, but you can see where the real gains were going. It was going to the top. Now, compared to this, the ARRA appears to be pro-poor, right? I mean, it is the people in the bottom are gaining more than people at the top. That is what is shown by the maroon bars, right? But still, it hardly compensates for the dramatic change in distribution of money income that took place in the U.S. during the previous 10 years. In terms of the subgroup disparities between disadvantaged and advantaged households, there are so many bars here, I just want to highlight a couple of them. Between non-white and white, non-whites in 2008 had a household level income that was about 72% of that of white households. That will face no change, even with ARRA. The same story holds true for almost every other disadvantaged group that you can think of. If you look at the last set of bars, which shows the single female-headed households, their income disadvantage, which is at 50% of that of married couples, will continue to be the same. So the bottom line here is that the Obama stimulus package is unlikely to make any dent in the substantial level of economic inequality that exists in this country overall, as well as between disadvantaged and advantaged population groups. Thank you very much.